and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. How are we doing today? Today we actually have a very, very special episode for you. It is, of course, you're listening to Beyond the Panel on UMFM. I am your host, Brian, along with the effervescent Curtis
the
Mensforth.
Return of that amazing phrase. I am happy to be here, man, as always.
And we have a very special episode. Sorry for, I'll get back to you in a second, Curtis. We have a very special episode today. It's Pledgerama here at UMFM. Of course, it's our donation drive. We are doing it in order to help raise money to keep the wonderful programming on air that we, like this show, for example, as well as improving everything so that way you can hit us up for like a whole bunch of different awesome new things. So, of course, if you want to pledge to us, you can hit us up on the telephones at 474-6610, which is great. You can pledge there, or you can hit us up at umfm.com/pledge. Every single incentive level comes with awesome stuff, including a UMFM Friends with Benefits card, UMFM earplugs, stickers, tote bags, toques, some awesome t-shirts, and of course, if you donate $25 or more to this particular show, we have a whole entire stack of comics, volumes, and issues
stuff
that you can pick and choose from as you so wish. We have Jeff Lee Myers' Descender, which
very cool,
a very unique, interesting, awesome looking
it's painted sci-fi comic from Image,
which is great. We have a couple of issues of Spider-Man the Gauntlet.
Yeah,
we have
stuff.
Spider-Man Nuff Said. Frank Miller's Ronin, Mark Waid's Justice League, Midsummer's Nightmare.
Precursor to Morrison's run.
Yeah, and XO Manowar Retribution.
Valiant Comics.
Yes.
Yeah, great stuff.
Of course, if more than seven people donate $25 or more, Curtis and I will cook up some more stuff to make
sure
that everybody is compensated properly. We want to thank you guys so much. Currently, right now, we are up to $26,508.53
out
of our $34,000 goal. So call in now, of course, if you want to donate and get in on this sweet comic book action. $25 or more nets you one of those seven comics of your choice. Of course, first come, first serve. You can catch us. Of course, we have our smooth operators piloting the telephones. You can call at 204-474-6610 or at umfm.com/pledge. Curtis, why is our episode so special today?
Why is today's episode? Well, we are talking about one of the most iconic characters in all of comics. Someone who has been around since 1939. That is Batman.
I'm Batman.
Great impression. I definitely couldn't do a Batman voice like Bale.
It's also entirely supremely special because we have been blessed and given an entire hour to talk
yes,
about Batman
that
today.
Too so we can talk a little bit more freely about a character who has been around for quite some time and someone that we both love quite a bit.
It's also pretty cute. So I actually want to kick this off. We've broken this down into chunks. We're each going to talk and discuss our favorite Batman storyline, our favorite Robin, our favorite Bat villain, and our favorite Bat movie.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll be able to keep that under an hour.
I think we can do it.
And of course we're going to finish off with our normal every episode. What are you reading? Top sellers.
Yeah, breaking it all down for next week.
Let me ask you first then, Curtis. Of course we have both read an insane amount of Batman comics.
Oh yeah.
What is
Batman fan?
What is, there are so many good storylines out there. No Man's Land,
hundreds.
Year Zero, Dark Knight Returns, Killing Joke, Death in the Family. What is your favorite? Even if it's not one of those, what is your favorite Bat story?
Okay. Well, I mean, the thing with Batman is, yeah, like you said, he has so many iconic storylines. It's very hard to pick one that's like a hands down a favorite. But one that I think that readers and viewers, listeners might want to check out. I'm sure everyone has at least heard Killing Joke mentioned in passing. So I'm not going to necessarily say that, although that is a super classic storyline.
Have you seen the movie, the animated movie?
Minus the 25-minute intro was pretty spot on.
Yeah. The intro was...
I did not like the intro,
the intro was really bad.
But yeah, it was pretty good. So yeah, I mean, everyone knows Killing Joke is a great story. Everyone knows, you know, Batman Year One by Frank Miller is a great story. But I'm going to highlight something that I think maybe not a lot of people have checked out, but I think deserves a spot on the best, definitely deserves a spot on the best Batman stories, and that
is
Batman: The Black Mirror by Scott Snyder.
He wrote that in, was it Detective Comics?
Yes, that was before the New 52, so this was written in 2010. That was Detective Comics. It was in the 800s. I'd have to look up the exact list, but it was like
you go, I'll look it up.
Yeah, sounds good. So Batman to Black Mirror is basically Scott Snyder starting his Batman run before he got handed the main Batman series. Basically what that is about is, at this point in time, Batman Bruce Wayne just came back from the dead, and he set up his Batman Incorporated kind of company. So he's out in the world setting that up. So this is actually Dick Grayson as Batman.
I love
Dick
Grayson's Batman.
But it's a great Dick as Batman storyline. So he is the main Batman in this. And it's basically about a secret society of Gotham, you know, socialites, all these rich and famous people. And they're in this secret auction that's bidding all these various kind of paraphernalia of various villains, like old weapons.
There's Man-Bat serum.
Yeah, it's really cool. They're basically a bunch of rich and wealthy people are buying up all these like villainous artifacts from past, you know, adventures.
That storyline is really heavy Oracle.
Yeah,
right?
Oracle is in that quite a bit, because
which is,
the
of course,
other half of that story.
For the uninitiated, Oracle is Barbara Gordon.
Yes.
Previously Batgirl.
The daughter of Commissioner Gordon.
Who is crippled during the events of Killing Joke.
Yeah, and this is, and like I said, because this is before New 52 continuity, everything that's happened in the past like has stayed, so she's still in her wheelchair. But the return of Commissioner Gordon's son, who not a lot of people know about, makes an appearance in this storyline. And he's kind of a crazed psycho who is out to get Barbara.
So this is kind of wacky.
Yeah, it's a really interesting psychological storyline. Snyder writes these characters so well, which is why he got handed the job.
It runs Detective Comics 871 to 881.
Yeah. It was right at the tail end of Detective Comics that he was writing that. Very good artwork by Jock and Francesco Francavilla. Really cool storyline. I would definitely recommend it. I don't think a lot of people are aware of it, which is why I wanted to highlight that for a bit. But why don't you tell me, you know, a story that particularly impacts you or something that you enjoy quite a bit, Brian?
Well, unlike you, I have a distinguished, like, there are a lot of good, really, like, there are a lot of really amazing bad storylines.
Yeah, there's so many.
But
so
I have a distinguished,
oh, you do have
clear
an absolute
cut
favorite.
Okay. Favorite. And that's the Scott Snyder written Court of the Owls storyline.
Oh, it's so good.
Because not only is it just such a, so the Court of the Owls is basically, there's this ancient conspiracy or this group of high-bred, high-born individuals that, like, run Gotham from the shadows, right?
Yeah, all these rich
and
wealthy people.
They pick and groom these children from a very young age. They train them with to be, like, assassins, and then they put, like, a certain copper chip in one of their teeth that not only allows them to be controlled, but allows them to be frozen and unfrozen at will.
Yeah,
when they
that
need
was
them
really
to,
cool.
When they need them to go kill somebody, which I think is a really unique thing. And Bruce has no clue that this exists. He's been defending. He's the world's greatest detective. Has no idea that, like, the 13th floor of all of these buildings in Gotham are, like...
Yeah, the conspiracy was
secret,
so interesting.
These secret Talon hideouts. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he's trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And all of a sudden, like, the court, who's been watching him this entire time... you know, starts, like, taunting him and claiming, like, oh, we've let you do this for a really long time.
You think you know your city, but we've been here this whole time.
We've been here this whole time controlling these events. And he is, like, losing his mind thinking about this. And there's this, there are two particular sets that I want to talk about. One, there's one scene or one set of scenes that I find...
I think I know the one you're talking about.
Very entertaining, where he figures out what's up, and he's at Wayne Manor, and he's like doing a whole bunch of research into like who the Talons are, and all of a sudden they send all of the Talons to his house.
Yeah, his house is swarming with
like
ancient assassins.
200 ancient assassins.
Yeah.
And he's like
nuts.
He's running around on the roof in his bathrobe fighting these guys. And he slides.
It was so Bruce Wayne.
He slides down the chimney in his bathrobe into the Batcave to escape these Talons. And he locks him and Alfred into the armory.
Yeah, his like emergency room.
And Alfred's like panicking because these Talons are like throwing themselves against the armory door, and they're like almost about to break through, and Bruce is like, I'm gonna need you to be real calm, Alfred. And all of a sudden the Talons finally get the door open, and it's Bruce sitting in like at least a 20-foot tall mecha bat costume,
something that he must have spent a fortune on
and an insane amount of time, and he just says, get the hell out of my house.
Yeah, he
in like a classic, like it's so like Clint Eastwood and Gran Torino, get off my lawn, old man.
That scene was so good.
It was so, and Scott Snyder knows when to insert like intentional but like super low-key comedy, and
yeah,
that was
the thing about his run.
That
is,
was one of them.
Yeah, Batman's a really serious and like brooding dark character,
and this is a really serious story.
Yeah, but there are like kind of more funny or lighthearted
yes.
scenes between like Bruce and Alfred, because they are like so close to each other, and other scenes like that,
and the scene where he like literally slaps the tooth
out of Dick's face, he punches him in the face,
and mysteriously manages to knock the one tooth he needs out of his mouth. Batman. But
that
yeah,
was
so
a great story.
That scene is classic and so funny, and it's just so it pinpoints what I find so odd. There are things about that story that aren't well written, and that is one of them, right? So the entire premise is that like both of these two parties, Bruce, who is supposedly the world's greatest detective, and the Court of the Owls, who is supposedly supposed to have been controlling everything in Gotham since like the beginning of Gotham.
Yeah, like the 1800s.
And on one hand, Bruce doesn't know that these nuts exist. And on the other hand, the Court of the Owls had no idea that this eccentric billionaire superhero was building a mecha bat suit in his bat cave. Like, it's so unbelievable from both sides that it's just funny.
Yeah, that storyline was Batman issue 1 to 12, and then all the other Bat family characters, of course,
yes.
tied into that.
All of there
so
are
it was
several,
like a year-long event,
there,
basically.
There's, because the Nightwing run that happens at the same time corresponds with that. Like,
yeah,
it adds
all
so
the
many
Bat family. So, like, yeah, there's a core 12-issue event, but I would recommend also reading, like, all the tie-ins
for
everyone.
Yeah, I would recommend the 12 issue Batman event. I would recommend the 12 issues of Nightwing that correspond with that. And then I think there's two issues of Batgirl, one issue of Red Hood, a couple of
There's a Catwoman one.
There's two or three Batgirl issues.
Yeah. There's a ton of extra material that kind of coincides. So it's Court of the Owls, and then the follow-up storyline was Night of the Owls.
Yes.
Or the City of Owls, I guess, and that whole event is just referred to as Night of the Owls.
And of course, you heard me talk last week during our Fantastic Four episode about how much good paneling as a form of storytelling
does for me. I know where this is heading. Yeah.
And there is a particular.
I was thinking the same.
There's one entire issue of during this run where the Court of the Owls has captured Batman and stuck him in this alabaster maze.
Yeah, he's basically their prisoner, and he's trying to navigate his way through the underground lair.
There's a fountain full of water, and the water is laced with like hallucinogens.
And he's also been awake for like 1 week straight, which is like insane.
And so he's losing his mind, and the way that they go about the art of it is that like everything is never exactly what it seems, and every single page that you turn you have to flip, like rotate the comic, you physically have to move the comic in order to understand the story and be able to read it.
It's
which
genius.
Is it's brilliant,
because you experience what Bruce is experiencing, and you're like twisting around, and you're like, this doesn't make sense, and you're like flipping it the other way, and you're like all confused,
and none of it makes sense, but like as you get to the end it starts to make more and more sense.
Brilliant.
It's so good. And And Bruce literally punches through the wall of one of the panels.
Yeah.
It's such a fourth wall breaking thing. Oh my God.
Definitely got to give credit to Greg Capullo on that for the art.
It's so incredible. Scott Snyder is such an incredible author, and Greg is such an incredible artist, and the way that they assembled that entire run. Geoff Johns presided over it as like the head of like DC Creative during that time period.
Yeah, he's the CCO, Chief Creative Officer.
And everything, every single one of those Bat Family comics, every single way that it tied in, that entire storyline was brilliant. And the only thing that I have to say about it was I was really disappointed with like how quickly the ending came.
Well, it's a whole long run, so yeah. After that storyline wraps up, we move on to the death of the family arc,
right?
With issue 13 of Batman, so it does kind of wrap it up, but at the same time, the court is not. Like, they're not entirely defeated at the end. Like, they still exist.
I really super do not want to spoil this because it is one of those mystery comics.
Can't say the twist or anything, but just know, like, the court, they've been around all this time. They're not going to be so swiftly defeated, but it was very interesting ending.
It's insanely well put together. I cannot say enough good things about
the storyline. The way Snyder builds into the existing Batman mythos by saying that they've been around this whole time, it's not a retcon, but it's basically just saying, like, yeah, they've been here this whole time and they've been doing all these things.
Everything.
It was so brilliant.
Everything. Is there any other storylines you want to talk about, or are we ready to move on?
Well, other honorable mentions. So yeah, definitely people, I think, would definitely be served well to just start with that, just because it is modern Batman. It's the start of New 52. So if you want to get into Batman, just read Court of the Owls and take it from there.
I mean, that's a really good place to jump
in.
And
then if you're really, you know, liking Batman stuff, you can go back and read classics like The Killing Joke, Year One, you know, Dark Knight Returns, Batman The Long Halloween. Those are all
No Man's Land's really good, too.
No Man's Land is a great 90s huge epic.
Yeah.
That was really good. The crazy thing about that was written by Bob Gale, who also wrote the Back to the Future movies.
Yeah, especially if you really enjoy...
Which I didn't know about for a long time until I figured out who Bob Gale was.
if you really enjoy how Batman interacts with society and how specifically Batman interacts with Superman, that one and Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, those are such a great, I guess, highlighting how he interacts with others, how he views, you know, himself in relation to like his allies and things like that.
Yeah.
Very, very great stuff.
So next, did you want to talk about favorite Robins or favorite villains?
Let's do favorite Robins.
Okay, so I think we both have the same favorite Robin, but I'm going to talk about a different Robin just so you can have your moment.
Okay, so for me, and a lot of people know this about me, is my favorite Robin has always been Tim Drake. And Tim Drake is the third Robin, so he comes after Dick being the first, Dick Grayson, Jason Todd being the second, and then Tim Drake was the third. He is my favorite Robin mainly because I find Tim Drake not only to be the most intellectual Robin, being the most clever.
Well, but, I mean, he discovers who Bruce Wayne is.
He was able to deduce Batman's identity so fast, which is like, I'm surprised no one else has done
I don't think it was fast. I think he described it himself, at least in Geoff Johns' Teen Titans run. He mentions that it took him like the better part of a year to figure it out, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's way after the fact, but like in the original storyline where he like meets like Batman and Bruce Wayne, that was a storyline called A Lonely Place of Dying, which is right after a death in the family.
Right, which is where Jason Todd gets brutally mangled and beaten to death by Joker.
Pretty close to that storyline. And basically, he observes like Batman and Nightwing or in action, and he witnesses Nightwing doing a very particular kind of acrobatic move, and he basically says there's only like one man who's known to be able to do this, and that is Dick Grayson of the Haley Circus,
right?
Who had an amazing acrobatic ability that no one was able to mimic. And then he's like, okay, well, this is Dick Grayson, so Batman must be Bruce Wayne. And it was like that, you know. It wasn't over the better part of a year, but I mean, New 52 and later storylines.
If it was that easy, then why the heck do most villains not figure that out?
I don't know. Just ignorance or just not, I guess, not. I mean, and that's the thing with Tim is like he's so observant, too. Like,
yeah,
not
but I mean, like,
thinks to link like acrobatic moves.
Come on.
Like,
there have to be more villains like Hugo Strange.
Well, Hugo Strange does know that Bruce Wayne is Batman. He's one of the few villains who does, but chooses not to do
Freeze.
Much about
Freeze
it.
Would have figured it out.
Riddler knows,
yeah. But I mean, he hasn't always known.
Joker knows, but never. He doesn't want to ruin his fun by.
Does
like,
Joker know?
He does. He's alluded to it several times.
Well, I guess yeah, because
but it's just
Killing
the fun
Joke, right?
Of like yeah, and in the Scott Snyder's Endgame where he taunts Batman, but he he never wants to refer to him as Bruce Wayne, because to him, he's always just Batman. But Tim, yeah, Tim has always been my favorite. He's the smartest Robin. He's such an interesting character. I've always liked his, basically his storylines, how he interacts with other characters, the fact that he's a little bit younger. That's what I've always liked about him. And the thing about him is he didn't have like a huge tragedy that turned him into Robin. He did it simply because he knew that Batman needed a Robin to rein him in. And that was his main motivation to like become a Robin. Which brings us into now your favorite Robin, or someone that you, maybe is not your favorite, but just
Tim Drake is absolutely my favorite Robin.
Brian and I both really love Tim Drake, but
he's so good.
Brian's going to talk about why Dick Grayson is also such a great character.
Dick Grayson's so great because he's just such a good, in my opinion, he is also a really good counterpart to Batman.
He's had such great character progression. That's the thing about
him, he went from being like really vengeful. You know, the fact that he lost his parents the same as Batman allows him to follow like the same sort of story arc.
And he's Batman's most trusted ally. He's like the only one who's actually taken on the Batman mantle himself that Bruce trusted. Which says a lot about, like,
you know, but him. The thing is that, like, I'm willing to bet that he would let Tim Drake do it.
Yeah, Tim Drake, Batman basically left Wayne Enterprises in Tim Drake's care after he was presumed dead and missing.
Yeah, and
he always has a contingency.
I really have a hard time believing that he wouldn't let Damian do it as well.
Fair enough. Yeah, there's been quite a few people,
you know,
to
like I'm
take
pretty
on
sure
the Robin mantle.
I'm pretty sure every single Robin, with the exception of Jason Todd and Carrie. Would probably
Carrie's not in continuity.
Yeah, but I mean, like, whatever. She was a Robin, and I'm pretty sure that like she was just there because Bruce needed somebody,
yeah,
right? Like he needed an emotional crutch.
Yeah, which is why like even just the nature of a Robin is so necessary to Batman as a character.
Well, it prevents his vigilantism from crossing into something much darker.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was in a really bad place, obviously, after Jason Todd died. Mm-hmm. So Tim Drake is great that way. But
yeah,
like
he
the
helped
fact
him a lot.
The fact that Dick's life follows Bruce's so well, like so closely, but he doesn't have the same sort of actual mental illness problems that Bruce does.
Yeah, the thing about Bruce Wayne is he's a fantastic hero, but he borderline is like,
he is
yeah,
he's mentally ill.
He's completely,
and that's fine.
Obsessed and consumed by his,
and that's fine. But
Batman.
Like because Dick doesn't have that, you see,
he's a lighter character. He's a hopeful character.
Yeah, exactly. Like Bruce is always like, and especially with the way that
Bruce can never crawl out of the hole that
he's in. He's all doom and gloom.
Yeah,
and
he knows that,
and darkness and despair.
And
everything is always so awful in the world. And Dick is like he followed the same career, like the same life arc, but is everything
opposite.
He brings
inspiration to a lot of people too.
Yes, Nightwing is awesome. I especially also like
he's very well respected amongst the DC community.
I like both of the romances though.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, like I love Batman's romance with Catwoman.
Yeah.
And I really like Dick's romance with Starfire.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
him and Starfire in the 80s Teen Titans.
Not even just that.
Well, that's where
like,
it started, but
I know,
like modern day.
I know,
even,
but
yeah.
Like the way that they continue on and the way that they interact with each other and like how Dick is like this absolute hardened, seen the worst of the world kind of person.
Yeah.
And Starfire is like this completely naive, so joyous, so hopeful.
She's
so
very innocent,
bright,
yeah. Very pure.
It's a really interesting dichotomy, and I love the way that they
work
together.
What about Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon as a pair? What do you think about that? That has been a thing in the comics.
So Ted Kord still exists.
Yeah, that has also been a thing in the comics. Both of them have been
Ted Kord.
With her at
Ted Kord still is a thing, and so like I'm not a fan of Dick and Barbara because I think that Barbara fits with Ted better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's fair. I
don't
respect
know.
That.
Bat family romances just feel a little bit incestuous.
I guess. And also just the fact that like it does lead to problems by being together just because their lives are so crazy. Like
yeah.
Anything could happen at any time.
It's just
right?
Bizarre and weird and stuff. So yeah, Dick Grayson's my boy.
He's the original Robin. He's great, but more so than that, he's a better Nightwing than he is as Robin, which is why we like Tim as Robin so much.
Yeah.
He's the perfect Robin.
Exactly. I would. Tim is the perfect Robin. Dick is just such a much better
his
character.
Yeah,
he's
progressed, and we like him as Nightwing
again.
Better
if
than
you
we do as
if
Robin.
You can if you can pick up that new 52 run of Nightwing that corresponds with the Night of the Owls and the Court of the Owls, I so recommend that you do it because it's
that was great. Even
good.
The current DC Rebirth Nightwing is really good too.
So good.
For anyone who's wanting to get into Nightwing, he's a fantastic character.
So who's your favorite? Who's your favorite villain?
My favorite villain.
There's so many good ones, right?
Guys, like everyone knows, Batman has
the insanest,
some of the best rogues ever. I'm not going to say best rogues gallery because that can be debated, but he has some of the best rogues.
It's either him or Spider-Man,
and that can be a discussion for the future as far as rogues gallery.
In terms of like top to bottom, like obviously, like if we're talking about like the rogues gallery that are really top heavy but still interesting, like obviously X-Men has a really top heavy but interesting rogues gallery, and the Fantastic Four
have a really best villains
have
too.
A really top heavy. It's a really top heavy, right? Like
Flash has some great villains.
No villain that Batman or Spider-Man has can personally, at least for me, be on the same level as like Doom or Magneto. Those two guys are like
the
tippy top.
Well, as far as Marvel villains go, I maintain that Doctor Doom is probably the greatest Marvel villain of all time.
He's wonderful.
I mean, Magneto's definitely up there.
But Batman has some really good ones too.
Yeah.
So like Joker, Hugo Strange, Killer Croc,
Scarecrow, Freeze,
Bane,
Riddler,
Penguin. Clayface,
Two-Face, you know, he has all these iconic villains.
Catwoman, there's so many that you can't name.
Villain,
just forget them all.
So as far as like, okay, who are some of my favorites, or which villains particularly resonate with me?
Yeah, like if you see that there's a new, I mean, obviously you're reading new Batman comics as they're coming out, but if you're like, if they announce like, hey, like we're coming out with a new Bat storyline and it involves this villain, who is it that's making you instantly pick it up?
Who we haven't seen had a storyline dedicated to them in a while, but who's a really great villain, or not even a villain, is Mr. Freeze. Like, can he be called a villain? His motivations are not villainous.
He is a good person doing bad things.
That's the thing, yeah.
For
he's not,
good reasons.
He is not like Joker. He is not insane. I mean, some would say he is because he's going on his quest for his wife, who we know he can never cure, but he wants to anyways.
There's one panel that I remember during, I think it's a 90s, it's definitely like based off the 90s animated series cartoon, where
the 90s cartoon is what gave him his tragic backstory. That's where he came from.
Right.
There's a storyline
based around Christmas, where it's Christmas Eve,
and
there's no snow in Gotham, and all of a sudden like there's snow and Batman's trying to figure it out, and he ends up fighting Freeze, right? And Freeze has got these guns or whatever, and it ends up all backfiring and explodes, and he's sitting there and he's like, Bruce is just like standing over him and he's like, it's Christmas, so I'll give you one chance to like explain what the heck you're doing and what's going on. And like they're in a graveyard and Freeze points at the grave of Nora, his wife, and it just says Nora Freeze, beloved wife. And he's like, we were married 10 years ago on a snowy Christmas Eve. Nora loved snow.
He just wanted
I thought
to
it
recreate.
Sad that there should be none this year, and I wouldn't want my Nora to be sad tonight. And it's just like the next panel is like a silhouetted, like there's the gravestone and there's snow coming down and it's Freeze standing there and Batman just hugs him.
And that just hits you because Batman knows tragedy. Like if anyone knows and can relate to that, it's definitely Bruce Wayne.
Correct.
So he would be sympathetic to that. And like the two of them, I don't think they hate each other. They have a very interesting relationship, Batman and Mr. Freeze, which is why I find Mr. Freeze to be such a great addition to Batman's rogues gallery.
Well, like,
he is such a fascinating character because his motivations are so
Bruce is so
different.
Smart, and I think he can relate, right? Like if he could use his smarts to save his parents' life, he would.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
So like that's exactly what Freeze is doing.
And he understands that, and I think he in a way he wants to save Mr. Freeze, but he can't because Mr. Freeze, like him, is so consumed in his mission. They just have a completely different outlook. But I feel like they both want the same thing, just to get back what they've lost, right? They both want that same thing, but they go about doing it in very different ways, which is very interesting contrast as far as their characters go. So
and
Mr.
like
Freeze,
he's the one that I can personally identify with the most. Like I'm not going to sit here and claim that I am 100% stable human being. Like, that's not close to the fact.
Every human being has gone through stuff and can relate to, like,
and so if
that
I
kind of stuff.
if I was as smart as Freeze was, and like I had the science to be able to save the person that I cared about absolute most in my life, and like my boss and or funders wouldn't let me do it, I think I'd probably do the same shit that Freeze did.
Well, that's the thing about Batman villains, is the whole thing is like they are people, and Joker, that was the whole point of the Killing Joke storyline, is, you know, you're one bad day away from being me. How close are each of us to becoming, you know, a certain character?
Yeah, okay.
Right?
There are villains that are more identifiable with than others, especially in the Bat universe.
It doesn't mean that a one bad day can turn a person into the Joker. And that was the thing, is he failed to do that because it didn't work. You know, Gordon did not become like him after, which
right,
was what
he was trying to prove. Kept his resolve.
So he failed. But like Mr. Freeze, for example, you know, like you said, like I think all of us would want to do that, right?
Yeah.
Or at least try.
So that's why he's
such a great character.
It makes him such a brilliant villain. He has so many cool gadgets and
he's great.
And powers that allow him to come at Batman in different ways, shapes and forms that don't, like, I mean, it's obviously Freeze, but like at the same time, like it's unique and interesting, and the way that Bruce has to go about solving the Freeze problem each time is different, especially because he doesn't want to hurt him. Like,
he's not out to completely just,
it's
like,
not
he
like
wants to help Mr. Freeze.
I mean, he wants to help all of them. Like, every single
he
one
does.
Of the villains is
even Joker, he extended his hand to, like, at the end of the Killing Joke, and then him and Joker shared a laugh together. Basically just saying, thanks for your offer, but it's too late for me. And then he told Batman a joke, and he laughed, and that was that.
Yeah.
But even then, yeah, like, Batman always wants to help his villains if possible.
Yeah, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Who else?
By the way, for people who are looking for a good Freeze storyline, this is a recommendation. It's actually a movie. Watch Batman Sub-Zero.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Series.
Incredible.
Watch that. It's a great Mr. Freeze storyline if you want to get into him as a character.
It's not very long either, is it?
No, it's like a 90 minute
I don't even
film.
Think it's 90 minutes.
But as far as other villains go, you wanted to talk about Riddler. So tell us,
yeah.
tell everyone why Riddler is such a great character.
So, he has the same sort of deductive...
I love the Riddler.
It's 67 minutes, by the way. It's
oh, really?
Literally,
okay. Wow.
It's literally
yeah.
an hour and 7 minutes
yeah,
long.
Yeah, so... watch that,
it's
guys.
Super worth a watch. If you have an hour to listen to this show, you have an hour
oh,
to go
yeah.
watch.
It,
you have an hour
great.
To go watch Sub-Zero.
Yeah.
So Eddie Nigma, of course. Or
it's funny how all of Batman's, or like a lot of Batman's villains, their names like imply like what they do as.
Well,
a character.
He changed his name to that though, right? Like his original name.
I guess that's
is,
been retconned too, but like yeah, like his name is Edward Nigma.
His original name is what, Nashton?
Yeah, Edward Nashton, and of course...
Eddie Nash, occasionally,
who,
depending
yeah.
on the crime that he's committing, but...
being a lover of puzzles.
Yeah, and so, first of all, nonsensical storyline reasons, right? Like, all of Riddler's stories are really cool and interesting because, like, it's all, like, you know who the villain is and you know what the end game is, but, like... the wordplay involved in it is
all
similar.
The clues and like,
it's similar
as a
to
reader.
Listening to, like, for me at least, reading a really good Riddler comic or watching a really good Riddler animated segment. It's to me much like listening to a really good hip hop album, right?
Okay.
Like, you know what the end game is, but like listening
like
to
how you
all
there.
the wordplay and
yeah,
punchlines
yeah. no,
along
I,
the way.
I agree with that.
It's unique and interesting, and I love it.
It takes you on a journey.
His
and
costume,
the clues and stuff.
His
right?
costume and art design is. Freaking dope too. It's so good. Like,
he's had a few different really cool costumes, like just the green suit or the all green with the question mark bodysuit
is great. The green suit is great.
I like the green suit.
The bowler hat is great. The question mark shaped cane is
yeah.
really
oh,
cool
great.
As well.
I prefer him in his green suit.
Even the way that he looks in like the newest animated series where he's like all dark and twisted with like the long hair, like
yeah, yeah.
His costume design and art design has always been great. And his deductive powers are like, you know, the
he's a great like
he's a great mirror for Batman.
Yeah, as he's not a physical match for Batman, but that's the thing is he's
almost as smart.
Yeah, he's an intellectual match,
which makes him really hard for Batman to plan for. Right, Batman's power is the anti-power. He knows what you do, and he's able to counter it because he's so smart.
Contingency plans for everything.
He's so smart, yeah. And the reason why I love the Riddler Batman matchup. Other than, like, the awesome wordplay and the really cool riddles, like, I always try and solve the riddles before Batman does. Sometimes I'm really good at it, but, like, I always try and solve those riddles before he does, and it's such a cool, unique thing. Like, it's so nostalgic, right? Like, you know, like, the Slylock Fox comics in the Saturday morning papers? The same kind of nonsense as that. Like, I want to feel like I'm smarter than I am. But the way that those two play off each other when Batman finally solves all the clues and meets the Riddler face-to-face, it is very much like a non-meta Reed Richards versus Doctor Doom.
Okay, yeah.
Like, it's just two great minds going up against each other, trying to outsmart the other one, not understanding what the other one is going to do ahead of time. And it really, really helps Batman and Bruce shine as a really smart human being. When he is outsmarting really stupid people like Killer Croc or Clayface, it doesn't mean anything. When he is outsmarting brilliant people like Riddler and Hugo Strange, it means something.
Yeah, he's more than a fighter or a brawler. Like, he's...
Yeah, he's just the very brilliant. One of the five smartest people in the world.
He's regarded to be number two. Lex Luthor is said to be the smartest man in DC, Bruce is said to be number two.
And so, like, those matchups are always insanely interesting for me, specifically because of that reason. Mm-hmm. I would much rather read, like, a Freeze comic than a Riddler comic, but Riddler comics...
Well, it depends who's writing it, right?
Yeah, okay,
that's
fair.
Under a good writer, it's like any villain storyline could be amazing.
But right? I really do like Killer Croc. I really do like Clayface. I love Slade.
Oh, great. Yeah, Deathstroke.
Deathstroke is really interesting to look at. When it's like Harley Quinn single stuff, that's really interesting to see how, like, she goes up against Batman. Obviously, Red Hood is fantastic.
Where can listeners turn to for a good Riddler story?
Ooh.
In your opinion.
Ooh.
I mean, I have one, but I'm curious to know what your favorite Riddler story would be. It's going to be Snyder's Zero Year, right? Like,
I really like Riddler and the Riddle Factory.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a one-shot, right? And so, like, it's just prime Riddler trying to focus on digging up dirt on celebrities.
Okay.
And so, like, yeah, it's just interesting. He does stuff involving Scarface, Scarelli, which is like a Gotham City gangster or stuff like that. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I really like that. Year one is probably...
Yeah, zero year.
Sorry, zero years is the best way to go for that.
Great.
But I really like Riddler and the Riddle Factory as, like, introspecting him by himself.
Or even the current Batman Rebirth just wrapped up A War of Joke and Riddles, which was like a super long, like, 8-part storyline. And that was the most recent appearance of Riddler. So people are looking for
really,
Riddler to turn to that too.
After you've read all that to kind of, like, establish your baseline Riddler knowledge, like, there's a lot of character progression in Hush.
Yeah, he's sweet.
There's a lot of character progression in Hush alone.
He was cool in Hush too, yeah.
Did you ever watch the 60s Batman series?
Who hasn't, obviously?
Well, who is your favorite 60s Batman series villain?
I mean, I feel like Cesar Romero, what was his name again? It was Cesar Romero, right?
Yeah.
Who played Joker? Yep. His performance, yeah. I was just trying to remember his name, yeah. He was actually a pretty cool 60s Joker. Like, I liked him as Joker.
Frank Gorshin played the...
Yeah, he played Riddler.
The Riddler.
I liked Riddler in that.
He was really good in that.
I found Penguin to be pretty enjoyable.
Julie Newmar was Catwoman.
She was Catwoman.
Burgess Meredith played the Penguin in that.
Yeah, Penguin was great too in that.
Joker was played by Cesar Romero.
Yeah, Cesar Romero was Joker.
The Freeze was in that, played by George Sanders.
His name wasn't even Mr. Freeze at that time. Like, he didn't get that name until later on. He was Mr. Zero when he was originally created.
Yeah. There's several different Mr. Freezes, actually, during that storyline.
Yeah.
During that series, at least. David Wayne is the Mad Hatter.
Yeah. They never had Two-Face in that show.
Was he around during that time?
Two-Face has been around since... He's one of the earliest Batman foes.
Are you ready for a real blast from the past? Do you remember King Tut? Yeah. In that show?
Of course.
He was so goofy and over the top. Yep. God, that show was good. If you actually, there's a 66 Batman comic, which is really good,
it's
too.
It's great. That's written by Jeff Parker, I believe, with art by Mike Allred.
It's pretty good. Speaking of multimedia Batman stuff, we've got a little bit more time. Did you want to talk about, the movies?
Yeah, favorite adaptations of Batman outside of comics?
Oh, I just want to say we have some more donations. Our new total, $26,583.53.
That is fantastic.
Thank you to whoever donated. Looks like $80 to us.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Definitely appreciated.
Come down and pick up your comic when you come to pick up the rest of your incentives.
Yeah. So as far as, like, Batman outside of comics, what are some of the best Batman films
films? Let's break this into two categories. Talk to me about what your favorite animated Batman is, and then we'll talk about what your favorite live-action Batman is.
DC has had a great, as far as I'm concerned, they've had a pretty good record with their animated films. You know, some
which
of them
cannot
been so great.
Be said about their
live-action films?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how...
At some point in time, we will discuss that, but yeah. So, tell me, then, what is your favorite animated Batman series?
What is my favorite animated Batman adaptation? I'd say you know what? I'm going to have to go with Batman Under the Red Hood.
It's really good.
That was such an emotional and
really
very,
good.
Very well-told animated film. Very good adaptation of the comic. Great voice acting. It was so good. I loved it.
That's a good call, man.
Probably that one is my favorite. Batman Year One, the animated film, was also really good, too. I like that one quite a bit.
I haven't had a chance to check it out yet.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it,
I haven't had a
chance. Check it out. That was really good. As far as you, like, what's your favorite animated Batman?
I really, really like Batman Gotham Knight.
Gotham Knight, was one of the first DC animated adaptations.
Right. It's six short anime. So, like, it is a Japanese film, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is anime. It is animated and done by a Japanese studio.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's based on stuff written by Bruce Timm.
Yeah.
But it's directed, every single short film is directed by a fairly famous Japanese animated director.
It's inspired by the Nolan Batman films too.
Yeah. And it's six parts, each part's not super long, but every single one is animated by somebody different, directed by somebody different, but like the voices are the same throughout.
Yeah.
And it tells a whole bunch of different stories through it's incredible. I really recommend checking it out.
Yeah, Batman Gotham Knight was really cool. As far as like Batman shows go, Batman the Brave and the Bold was a love letter to Golden and Silver Age comics. That was a really enjoyable series.
It's hard to beat 90s Batman,
yeah,
though.
But 90s Batman, the animated series, is always going to be the greatest. Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill, need I say any more?
It might.
Definitive voices of Batman and the Joker.
It might be the best animated anything.
It changed everything. It introduced Harley Quinn. It gave Mr. Freeze his tragic backstory.
It took so much influence from like film noir.
Yeah, visually
stuff.
It was so good.
It was amazing.
It was amazing.
I don't think there's any. It's going to be really hard for anybody to ever top that. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there's a lot of other really good. Like, Ultimate Spider-Man is really good. The 90s X-Men comic is really good. The 90s Spider-Man comic is, of course, really good. Some of the newer Batman stuff is very good. I don't think there's anything out there that's going to come close.
Yeah, it was so prolific and phenomenal.
Can't say
enough good things. So let's turn to live action.
Live action. Hit me up with your favorite movie.
A lot of people are just going to say Batman, the Dark Knight, you know, the second in Nolan's trilogy.
I don't even think it's the best in Nolan's trilogy.
Well, a lot of people are going to say that.
Hot take.
Not saying my opinion. I'm saying the general consensus is that is the best Batman live-action film.
I really like Batman Begins in that one.
Batman Begins
in that
good.
Trilogy.
But I like Ben Affleck's take on Batman. Like, I like him as Batman.
He's so good as Batman, but that movie's so bad.
Yeah, he just wasn't serviced well by a good script.
That movie
and
was
good movie.
Really bad.
But a good Batman solo film with Ben Affleck in a role could be a really good Batman movie. There's a lot to see.
Is there one coming up, or is he?
There is. I think it should start filming in 2018 with the 2019 release date.
Oh, right, because they're just doing Justice League stuff right now.
It's getting directed by Matt. Yeah, it's going to be directed by Matt Reeves.
Oh, that should be okay though. Hopefully, at least.
So yeah, I'm expecting good things from that. So that could be really great. But
as long as they don't try to cram too many storylines.
That doesn't exist yet, so I can't say it's my favorite. So I guess right now, I'm going to say Dark Knight and Batman Begins are just those two.
Batman Begins is really, really good. Liam Neeson as Ra's al Ghul is incredible.
But we can dial it back a bit to some of the 90s films. I know you have an opinion, which may not be super popular, but let's hear it.
Okay, so like, don't get this twisted. I really like the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, those are fine.
Here comes two hot takes on the back-to-back. First, I don't like Michael Keaton as Batman.
I never liked him as Batman either, to be honest.
He is such...
So I'm in agreement.
There are too many scenes in those movies...
He was a bad Bruce Wayne to me.
...where he smiles and it looks so goofy in the bat costume.
Michael Keaton has that smile that he does. I know the one you're referring to.
It's so bad. And so Tim Burton's movies are actually like really well directed. They're kooky, they're colorful, they're interesting, the storylines are great.
Yeah, the directing wasn't bad.
I'm
not big on Keaton.
I love Michael Keaton as an actor. Hate him as Batman.
Yeah.
He's so good as Beetlejuice. He's really good as the Vulture
in the newest
Spider-Man movie. Yeah. He's so good. I like Michael Keaton as an actor. I just didn't like him as Bruce Wayne or Batman.
No, I didn't like him as Bruce Wayne at all.
And so I didn't like him, and I super don't like Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are going to say they really like Nicholson. A lot of people like Heath Ledger, but a lot of people are also going to say Nicholson was one of the greats.
I didn't like it.
I would say Cesar Romero is a better Joker.
Correct.
In my opinion. He portrayed that wonderful Joker.
I want to see Mark Hamill do Joker. Why not?
Like live action.
Live action.
I mean,
Mark Hamill.
He can do a voice, but like, what would he look like though?
His face is already really scarred.
That's an interesting idea. I was thinking maybe Willem Dafoe as Joker.
Ooh.
What do you think about Willem Dafoe doing Joker?
See, okay.
I mean, we have Jared Leto now as Joker. I thought the tattoos, that whole aesthetic that they went for, I hated Suicide Squad. I thought it was awful. I did not like it one bit.
Willem Dafoe as Joker would be incredible, but like, do you not think there'd be way too much like weird crossover in between him being the Green Goblin?
I just think he could do a good Joker,
Godspeed,
though.
Spider-Man.
I just think he could be a good Joker, though. And that curiosity, like, I just want to see him as Joker.
He'd be really good. I don't know if he'd be able to do the... Oh, no, yeah, he'd be able to do the voice.
Oh, yeah, and the laugh. And
Hashtag Willem Dafoe for Spider-Man.
I think him in the makeup...
for Batman, sorry.
I think him in the makeup and everything, like, I think...
He could do the smile. Oh,
but
my
the thing is
goodness.
He's already in a DC movie now. He's going to be in the Aquaman movie. He's playing Volko, Aquaman's advisor.
Yeah!
That's who Willem Dafoe is playing. So he's already in the DC... So we're not going to ever get him as Joker, unfortunately.
I still think Mark Hamill would be great.
But going on to your favorite Bat film,
I like Batman Forever.
Yeah,
this is hot take number two. My favorite Batman movie is Batman Forever. Yes, Val Kilmer sucks. There's no getting around that. But Joel Schumacher does such a good job. Though that movie looks and feels like a ramped up, better version of Warren Beatty's Dick Tracy.
It had a very interesting visual.
It's so unique. Everything is so over the top. The Batmobile is over the top. It's got so many unique gadgets. The costumes are colorful. Robin's costume is shiny and colorful. Two-Face looks brilliant in that movie.
He looked just like Silver Age Two-Face.
The makeup is on freaking point.
Tommy Lee Jones
is out of his mind in that movie.
Tommy Lee Jones.
He does such a good job as Two-Face in that movie.
That was a very interesting portrayal.
There are two different Two-Faces, right? Like, there's the insane Two-Face that you see in like Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, and then there's a very calm, calculated Two-Face that you see in like the 90s animated series.
Yeah,
but like,
there's also kind of like a psychotic but almost funny Two-Face,
which is what I guess kind of more
like
with Tommy,
kind of the comical.
Yeah, that's kind of more with
Tommy,
like Tommy
Lee Jones.
Jones.
That was what he went for,
and he did such a good job.
And
of
that
it.
Does harken back to like Silver Age stories. So like,
yes,
he was pulling from existing.
And Jim
stuff.
Carrey is so good as the Riddler. Not only
Jim Carrey is a very charismatic he's a charismatic guy.
That scene where he figures out where Two-Face lives because he's super smart, and he's in Two-Face's lair, and he's like prancing around. He's like, "It's so you, and yet so you."
Yeah, like it's Carrie was having a fun time filming that. I'm sure
so good. Oh, my goodness, it's what made me fall in love with the Riddler in the first place.
Yeah.
Right, like watching that. Insane.
That was 1995.
Yes,
when that movie came out.
Dr. Chase, Meridian Chase.
Yes,
very attractive. Very good bat interest.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer wasn't like the worst in the world. I think he's actually an okay Batman, just a really bad Bruce Wayne.
Do you think he looked like Bruce Wayne? I didn't think Michael Keaton even looked remotely like Bruce Wayne.
I think Val Kilmer looked more like Bruce Wayne than Michael Keaton did.
Yeah, I agree.
But I still don't think he looked that much like Bruce Wayne. Ben Affleck is Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, Ben Affleck does look like looks like 90s animated series Bruce Wayne.
Ben Affleck
looks
Bruce
like
Wayne.
Comic Bruce Wayne too.
He's Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
that's the end of it. Pierce Brosnan could also probably do a fairly
when
good
when he was in his prime, like during the James Bond
during the James
days,
Bond
like 90s,
era. Yeah,
90s. Pierce
if he put
Brosnan.
On an American accent,
maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, he
be
could do
interesting
it.
Interesting to see.
I mean, it's never going to happen, but he could have done it.
What could have been?
He could be old man Bruce in like a Batman Beyond live action film.
Speaking of, that would be a cool movie. If we can get like things like Blade Runner 2049 with amazing
Batman
visuals.
Beyond.
Imagine Neo Gotham in like the future.
Great.
That'd be so cool to see.
So anyways, back to Batman Forever, right? Like the storyline is interesting and awesome. You know, the fact that the Riddler has a different backstory, granted, but like goes insane because Bruce Wayne and his Wayne Foundation the Wayne Corporation shrug him off.
Yeah.
The fact that he's really into puzzles, the fact that he designs all this stuff himself, the fact that he outsmarts Bruce Wayne with the television box and learns who Bruce Wayne is because of that. So cool.
Yeah.
So cool. And then the way that things go at the end with him getting like all deformed and like getting crushed by the giant Two-Face coin, like it's just
and then he gets locked up at Arkham at the very end, and he knows Batman's identity, but no one believes
nobody
him,
believes him because he's insane.
That's the thing.
And of course it has Robin in that it has two really funny Robin scenes in that movie. One where before he figures out Bruce Wayne is Batman, but before he becomes Robin and he steals the Batmobile and goes out cruising for ladies in the Batmobile.
Oh my goodness.
Hey baby, do you want to take a ride in my love machine? Like,
oh,
that
my goodness.
Is so
that was Chris O'Donnell played Robin.
He played Robin in Batman and Robin, but we're not going to talk about that because George Clooney is really bad as Batman.
And he knows it, too.
Oh.
Like he's gone on record to say, you know, apologize for his portrayal of Batman. Oh. That movie was something else.
But the other line, when they wash up on shore of like, the Riddler's hideout, and Chris O'Donnell says, "Holy rusted metal, Batman." And Kilmer's like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "It's rusted metal. It's full of holes. Holy rusted metal!" Like, it was just such a callback to like Burt Ward, right?
The 60s.
It was such a callback, and that entire movie is just a callback to Silver Age Batman stuff. It's great. I love that movie. It's one of those movies that's so bad that it's looped around and has become good for
me. You know it's a
me.
Bad film, but it's like, I can salvage some enjoyment out of it and appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Good movie. I'm going to go home and watch that tonight. I'm going to go home and watch that movie tonight.
Batman Forever.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be live tweeting it on our Twitter.
Oh, okay.
At BTP Comic UMFM. I'm going to be tweeting. I'm going to be live tweeting me watching. Potentially some pictures, definitely some hilarious GIFs.
Oh,
do you want to take a ride in my love machine?
I bet there's so many from that film.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about before we go to the wrap up?
Let's talk about some things that we're looking forward to as far as comics this week. New releases, bestsellers, I guess.
Yeah, okay. So some of the new releases that I'm really interested in, obviously I'm not going to get around to reading all of these, but I would like to if I have the opportunity. Aquaman number 29, Batman number 33.
Start of a new story arc.
Yes.
For people who are just jumping in or curious about that, they wrapped up A War of Joke and Riddles, so now they're starting a new Batman story arc.
Correct. Batman the Drowned number one, which is, of course, more from Dark Knight's Metal.
They've been doing a ton of one-shots.
I'm really excited for this. It's probably going to be really good.
The collected edition release will be cool because I'm sure it'll have the core event and all the tie-ins.
Yeah,
so
probably.
Just waiting for that.
Green Arrow 33, Injustice number 12, Injustice 2 number 12, which is...
Have you been reading current Injustice stuff?
I haven't. I'm waiting for a collected volume
of
it.
Because
I know it's really heavy Blue Beetle and Booster Gold.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm really excited for that. It's just Titans number 16. And then, of course,
Grown Up Titans.
On the Marvel side of things, Incredible Hulk 709, which is new. This is all new Marvel Legacy stuff. So, Return to Planet Hulk, baby!
Just in time for a new Thor film. I wonder if that's a coincidence. I think not.
I don't think so.
No, they always do that. Anytime a new MCU film comes out, their comics always reflect.
Invincible Iron Man 593. Of course, these are all really daunting, scary numbers, but they are brand new.
Yeah, they are brand new story arcs.
Please don't forget that.
Return to a lot of classic storytelling. It's just, they're continuing the old numbering, so it can be a little bit...
They are brand new.
Be a little bit scary.
Mighty Thor 700, which...
Landmark.
Can't be a coincidence.
Nope.
Spider-Gwen number 25, which is, of course, the first part of the Gwenom series. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about Spider-Gwen?
Okay, so Dan Slott has been writing Spider-Man for forever, it seems
and ever.
And in not too long ago, 2015, he had an event called Spider-Verse where he basically introduced... he didn't introduce, but it took place in a bunch of alternate realities of all these different Spider-Men and alternate universe takes on Spider-Man. And in one of those universes, Peter Parker died instead of Gwen, and Gwen was Spider-Gwen.
Right.
And that became so popular, just some one-off idea that Gwen, Spider-Gwen has spinned off into its own title. It's become a huge hit. A lot of people like it. Seems to be doing well, so...
And, of course, it involves some really interesting things. So this Gwenom one, of course, is going to be symbiote stuff.
Yeah, dealing with that.
So I'm really interested to see how Gwen, because she's a completely different person than Peter is, how Gwen deals with the symbiote and Black Suit Spidey.
Yeah.
Now, of course, this one is close and near and dear to your heart. Do you know who the crime kingpin is in the Gwen universe?
The crime kingpin in the Gwen
in Spider-Gwen universe. Do you know who the crime kingpin is?
I haven't been reading Spider-Gwen.
It's Matt Murdock.
Ah, that doesn't surprise me actually. That in that universe he'd be the kingpin.
Yeah, he's the kingpin, and he's really good. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, and she's Spider-Gwen is in a relationship with Matt Murdock as the kingpin.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it's really good. Okay. I super recommend that you check. If you are not going home.
I keep tabs on a lot of comics, but that's one I haven't been currently reading.
If you're not going home, you need to read this. It's only 25, so it's only issue 25.
They got a deluxe edition out for that, and I'm sure they're collecting that into
check it out. Try to pick
volumes.
It up.
That's interesting.
Okay, so this is tangentially related. Of course, it is comic book related. Underneath Boom Comics, they are releasing the first episode of Rugrats.
Rugrats.
Yeah. So, quick, out of your top five 90s comics or 90s Nickelodeon.
90s
stuff.
Nickelodeon series.
Yeah.
What are my favorites?
Yes.
We got Hey Arnold, Doug, Cat Dog, obviously Rugrats. What would five be, though? I don't know. I don't know.
Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah, I guess
Rocko's Modern Life?
Yeah, probably one of those, then. Yeah.
Those are pretty good. Yeah. I like all those. I'm also a real big fan of Rocket Power.
Yeah.
Of course, me, being an athlete and really involved in sports, like all the stuff that was involved in that was just... It also invented, one of the all-time best words... in the entire history of English lexicon, shooby, which is, of course, reference to a tourist that's walking around with socks and, brown strap-on leather sandals.
That's amazing.
I love that. Shooby's such a great word.
So there's that coming up.
Also, SpongeBob.
Yeah. Obviously, SpongeBob, late 90s Nickelodeon.
The first four seasons of SpongeBob are the best four seasons of written television ever.
The writing was so clever.
It's so good. I watched that and I pick up on things that I didn't see, when I originally watched that.
I think everyone does.
It's so good. It's so good. Okay, so what do you the bestsellers list of last week.
Yeah.
Dark Knight's Metal number 3, Action Comics 989, Detective Comics 966, Mr. Miracle,
yes,
number 3.
Everyone, read Mr. Miracle. It's probably the best, one of the best things that DC is putting out right now.
Amazing Spider-Man 789, which is, of course, Marvel Legacy stuff, so it's
Dan
making
Slott's
the rebound.
Run ends at 800, by the way, well, so he's almost done.
And, as you informed me today,
yes,
Nick Spencer!
Nick Spencer will be taking over Amazing Spider-Man.
Nick Spencer!
As of after 800.
Do you think he brings, okay, first of all, there's no way he doesn't bring in the awesome, unique, quirky humor from Superior Foes. Do you think he like brings in like the Superior Foes gang? Do we get a crossover?
I think we might get a return to those characters. It's
yes.
Hey, anything's possible, man.
Give
anything can happen.
Give me that.
We'll see.
Please. Okay. Flash 32, Wonder Woman 32.
DC.
Hal Jordan. Big surprise.
Yeah. No.
Hal Jordan
no
and the Green Lantern Corps number 30, Justice League of America 16, and Baby Teeth number 5. Do you know anything about Baby Teeth?
I haven't been reading. Who's publishing that?
I have no idea. Let's look this up really quickly. What are you reading?
Next, well, tomorrow's being Wednesday, new Green Arrow, new Superman, new Batman issue, all 33 for those series.
Aftershock. Baby Teeth is
okay.
Aftershock.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the publisher. Haven't read that comic.
Written by Donny Cates.
Yeah, Donny
Artist
Cates
is
doing a lot of
Gary
Marvel
Brown.
Stuff right now.
The tagline on this
I
is...
I do know Donny Cates.
Sadie Ritter, is 16 years old, 9 months pregnant, and scared out of her sweet, nerdy mind.
Okay.
Having a baby that young is tough, but with the support of her loving family behind her, everything should be okay. Oh, yeah. Her baby is also the Antichrist and is going to break open the barriers between the earthly and demonic planes and unleash eternal suffering to all humankind.
A blend of family drama and supernatural.
Huh.
Okay.
Actually, might want to read that. That
well,
sounds kind of interesting.
Well, I do know Donny Cates, so interesting.
Cool. So, yeah.
That's everything that's coming up in the next little bit.
Get your pledges in, of course, if you want to hit us up. Our smooth operators, 204-474-6610 or at umfm.com/pledge. Of course, you can email us, beyondthepanelumfm@gmail.com, or check us out on Twitter, beyondthepanel, or btpcomic at a BTP comic UMFM.
Yeah.
God, it's the worst Twitter handle of all time. I'm so stupid for making it. Of course, if you donate to this show over $25, you get to take home one of these lovely comics or one of the lovely ones if there are more than enough people. Thank you so much, everybody. We appreciate
you. Super grateful to everyone who donated and is supporting us.
And until next time, we'll see you next mission.
See ya. We'll be right back.